afternoon and welcome to the last edition of Your Book Garden for 2018. This is a copyrighted show presented by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm Tina Sesedic, your host. Before I introduce my guest today, I would like to share some exciting news with you. My romantic suspense, Love with a Side of Crazy, was recently nominated for Best Romance of 2018 with Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm honored and a little bit awed to be in the running for Book of the Year with such fantastic authors. On December 19th at 7 o'clock Central Time, Authors on the Air will be hosting a one-hour live show where they will announce the winners. If I win, you will get a chance to hear me cry on the air or maybe faint, but then you won't hear anything except a loud thump as I hit the floor. Watch my Facebook page, Your Book Garden, for the link to the show. I am very excited about this. So I wanted to get that little plug in there. So if you could join me, that would be wonderful. So today I am happy to have another talented Wisconsin romance author on my show, Amy Sandis. Amy writes historical romance about dashing and sometimes dangerous men who know just how to get what they want, and women who at times may be reckless, bold, and unconventional, but who always have the courage to embrace all that life and love have to offer. She has 10 books in print, including 7 Regencies, 2 Western historicals, and is part of a Christmas anthology. Welcome, Amy.
Hi, Gina. Thanks for having me. Hey, and congratulations on that nomination. So exciting.
Oh, thank you. I know when I see some of the books that they have been reviewed with Authors on the Air, and I'm like, oh my gosh, who am I to be in with some of these people? But you know, it's just thrilling.
Oh, you're awesome. That's,
even
that's
talking
awesome.
About it, I'm starting to sweat just talking about it.
So. Oh, I love it.
Before we get started to talk about your books, before we went on the air, Amy and I were talking about how long or when we met, how long we've known each other, and neither one of us can really remember how long it has been, but it has been quite a few years. The first time I can remember actually working with Amy was when she was the head of our annual Wisconsin Romance Writers Conference in Wausau. And our group, because we're both small groups, our writers group here in Eau Claire went over and helped out. I believe we did the baskets. And,
yeah, the raffle basket.
Yeah, we watched Amy running around. She was very pregnant, and we were all extremely worried about her. We just kept telling her, sit down, we'll do it, sit down, we'll do it. I mean, we were just waiting for her to go into labor. So that's my first really big memory of you was, oh my gosh, she's going to have this baby anytime. How far along were you?
I think at that point I had about 4 weeks to go.
Okay.
3 or 4 weeks to go. So I was near the end, but being my third child and, you know, I was about 35 at the time, I was feeling it. I definitely was, but there was so much to do.
Oh, well, you did an excellent job. You know, and since then, we've been at several conferences together. We've done some book signings together. Most recently, we attended the Romance Writers of America convention in Denver, Colorado, where Amy and I and several other Wisconsin authors got to spend quite a bit of time together, which is always nice because we don't get to see each other that often. So
I know you would
drinks, think a few meals.
Yeah, you would think with us all being in Wisconsin, we would see each other more often. But we had to go to Denver to hang out. It seemed.
Yeah, so it was a good time. So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself besides that you have 3 children?
I do. I have 3, and my oldest is freshman in high school, and I've got the boy in middle school, and my baby girl is the first grader. So, you know, they're busy running here, running there. Otherwise, I also have a day job that I still have to go to Monday through Friday, as much as I wish I didn't. But I write in the mornings before anybody's awake, hopefully. When house is still quiet, it's my best time to be productive with the writing. Otherwise, my evenings are pretty full with, you know, kid stuff, mom stuff, wife stuff. I'm a snoozer. I'll admit it. I set my alarm for about 4:15, And hopefully, well, I get up and I shower and everything and get my coffee. I'm hopefully sitting down to write around 5. That's my goal every day. So sometimes it works out better than other days.
You know, I'd always, you know, I wrote several of my books while I was working full time when my husband and I owned our business. But, you know, looking back, I didn't have kids. My kids were already grown up and gone. So I'm always in awe, you know, when I talk to, you know, authors like yourself who, you know, you've got several young children and you have a full-time job and you're still able to, you know, to put out, in my opinion, excellent books. I mean, I love your books.
Thank you.
So,
thank you.
And she lives in central Wisconsin, what, about 2 hours
yep.
from me, I think? Hour and a half, something like that?
Hour and a half, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, your husband, who's a very talented artist too, isn't he?
He is, yes. He loves to do portrait art. He's working on 2 pieces for a close friend of his, doing pet portraits right now for Christmas gifts. He loves it. He loves pencil medium, chalk. It's one of the things he wishes he had more time for, but it's very impressive stuff. I keep asking him to draw my covers for me, but the man will not do that for me. I don't know why.
Oh, that
maybe
would be
someday.
So cool if he did that.
It would.
Yeah.
I would love it.
Because I know he did these little portraits of people for the conference. In fact, I still have mine. I can see it right from here. It was Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
he
did.
He had it at the tables.
Yeah, but I had him do miniatures of like iconic heroes. Most of them, I think, were from movies. So, yeah, he did a good job with those.
Yeah, but I kind of remember we were all kind of fighting over the ones we wanted at our table, and I wanted Harrison Ford, and I got
yeah.
him. So.
Good for you. I know. For some reason, no one wanted Leonardo DiCaprio from Titanic. I thought, someone will want this, but I don't know. I guess too young,
really?
Maybe.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, yeah. We hate to admit that we're all getting older, but
I know.
That's interesting. Something I have to admit, I had not read your books. Regency is not my go-to genre.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided, I think after one of our book signings or something, I'm like, okay, I'm going to read. They were
The Fallen Ladies?
The Fallen Ladies.
Yeah.
And I read the first one. I devoured the second one. I sucked up the third one. took them to my writer's group and saying, you have to read Amy's books. They are so good. And somebody took them, came back the next one, said I couldn't put them down. I loved them. I mean, even though they're in Regencies, your characters kind of, you know, they live out of the box, the Regency box. And I really, really like that.
Yeah, that's something I make a point of doing. I'm trying to find ways that my characters can be a little on the edge of what may have been accepted at the time. I think that's important to show the rebels and the, you know, the revolutionaries, even if they were revolutionary in a small way, just a, you know, maybe domestic way, mundane way that you wouldn't think of causing a lot of change in history. But I think those are the ways that history changed. You know, it's just individual people deciding to make different choices for themselves that you wouldn't expect for the time. So that's something I like to focus on, especially with my female characters, my heroines, for sure.
Well, I like the fact because it's like, okay, it was a Regency. Nobody had sex. I was like, well, yeah, they did. You know?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, you gave your female characters permission, you know. Well,
yeah.
I don't know if I say permission, but... And I just thought, you know, yes, for them, they're strong women, and you know, and they went for what they wanted, and you know, I just thought that was really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, and they didn't have to face horrible consequences.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that series, the Fallen Ladies series? It's 3 books.
The Fallen Ladies, yeah, that was the first series I wrote with Source Books, a new publisher for me at the time. And, you know, it's a series of 3 books about 3 sisters. And each of the books focuses on one sister and her romantic story, but they all take place at about the same time. So that was a challenge and a lot of fun to, you know, kind of have these different aspects of the same kind of time period where you didn't know what was happening with the other sisters until you got to their story. And then how they all kind of came together and how, you know, each sister found her happy ever after in totally different ways. Totally different ways.
Yeah, they were completely, yeah, completely different. So, I mean, you read the second one and, you know, you read the first one, you read the second one. It was like you really didn't know what to expect, you know, because they were three totally individual, you know, women. And, yeah, I really enjoy. I don't know who in my writers group has the books. No, I know I don't have them. They're, you know, I think at one point I said I wanted them back, but somebody's hoarding them. So.
Yeah, there you go. Well, share the love. That's okay.
Yeah. So, and then you said that was with Sourcebooks, and they did something interesting to you, didn't they? Because you write Regencies. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, after finishing that series, The Fallen Ladies, you know, I had some ideas of what I wanted to do next. And when my agent spoke with my editor at Sourcebooks, they said, well, can she do a Western historical? We'd like to see what she could do for a Western historical line. And my agent was like, I know you do Regency, but would you consider this? And I was like, yeah, sure. Because honestly, I have folders and folders of notes and ideas going back to the mid-90s for story ideas. And there was definitely a time when I had ideas for Westerns when I was reading Joanna Lindsay and, you know, Elizabeth Lowell, all these great authors doing Westerns back in the 90s. And so I just found up some old notes, found an idea that I had set aside a long time ago and came up with a 3-book pitch. And Sourcebooks went for it. So that's the series that's currently releasing this year and next year.
And it's called the Runaway Bride series.
Yes, it is. Yep, first book was The Gunslinger's Vow, and the next one coming out is The Cowboy's Honor, coming in February, actually.
You know, and it's one of those things where I read The Gunslinger's Vow, and just like your Regencies, I fell in love with it. And, you know, it's one of those things where I almost wish I had waited till they were all done, because now it's like, I've got to wait till the end of February for the next one.
Yeah.
And I'm a sucker for Westerns anyway, so.
That's right. You've written more than one set in the Western too, haven't you?
Yeah. I've written a couple. So, my next one I'm working on is going to be another Western historical. So, and again, your female characters are, well, in this one, and I'm assuming they're going to be in your other ones, are strong women and who fall for strong men.
Yes, right, and don't have to compromise who they are to be in that relationship. I think that's the key, you know, it's like they get to be exactly who they are and loved for that reason, which is fun to write.
Well, and then one of the conflicts is she's a Eastern lady and he's a, you know, Western guy and, you know, cowboy. And of course, you know, so many, you know, men when they see, or sometimes women, you know, somebody came out from out east and went out west and they figured they were, you know, they were, what's the word for it?
Green or tenderfoot, right?
Yes, tenderfoot. Yes, that's the greenhorn, tenderfoot. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. And, you know, that little conflict where, well, you know, that might not be true. So,
yep, exactly.
I I love your covers. Does Sourcebook design your covers too?
Their art department does. I have an amazing cover artist who's done all of them. His name is Greg Gulbronson. And he is amazing. I love the vivid colors. I love the, you know, the degree of sensuality in the covers, because I think it matches the story and the degree of sensuality in the story. So definitely got lucky with my covers, and I hope I can keep getting the same style, same artist, because I love them.
Yeah, and the next one too, the one that's coming out in February, that's a pretty neat cover too. I really like that. It's, you know, you hate to judge a book by a cover, but I like your covers. So,
yeah, me too. me too.
I'm always interested in finding out how authors, you know, you write series, how mm-hmm. authors keep track of your characters, you know, from one book to the next. Because even though, you know, like in your Fallen Ladies series, you know, they're sisters, they're different, but they all, you know, they're in all the books. And it's like, how do you keep track of your characters? Mm.
That's a great question. I wish I had a better system. You always hear people who have these wonderful character Bibles, they call them, or whatnot. And I honestly tried. I tried to pull up a spreadsheet and enter in pertinent information like eye color and, you know, date of birth and middle names and anything else that maybe came up at some point. And I got some stuff in there, but then I just never got back to it. So what I really end up doing is, luckily, I have copies of my books on the shelf right by my computer where I work. And if I need a detail, I grab the book and flip through the pages. Not very efficient, but that's what I do. Someday.
I have found myself doing that.
Well, I figure when my oldest is a little older, I'll hire her to catalog all those details for me. Because I just can't sit and do spreadsheet stuff when I could be writing instead. So I think I need to hire my oldest child as an assistant someday. Get that done.
That's a good, a good idea. And I agree with you with, our writers group is, some of them use, that one, that's a program where they have note cards and Scrivener.
Mm.
And we all decided we were going to buy it, which is, it was a decent, you know, it wasn't a bad price. And so we were all going to learn it. And every time it opened up, it's like, I could be writing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm using this time to use, you know, to learn a program that I'm not sure I want to use because I use a notebook.
Binder.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what I did in the very beginning too, is I would keep kind of notes and handwritten notes and little files in my desk. But I'm, you know, writing under deadline. I lose even time to do that lately, it seems. So almost every spare minute is really writing. It's really hard, like you said, to devote time to something else that takes away from the writing.
So do you consider yourself then a pantser or a plotter?
I have definitely moved into being more of a pantser. I used to be a very in-depth plotter, not to the point of outlines, but I really knew everything that was going on. But again, with the deadline crunch I've been under the last couple of years, I usually don't have that kind of time. I have to get right into writing that book, whether I've got every twist and turn figured out or not. But one thing that always helps me in the pantsing process is, as long as I know my characters inside and out, I can pants it pretty okay. If I'm pantsing it and I run into a corner and I can't get myself out, it's probably because I don't know my characters or I'm making them do something they wouldn't do. So that's what I fall back on, is going back to the characters. Who are they? What choices would they make? Would they really be doing or saying this? And then I can get the story to flow from there, usually okay, without, you know, really plotting it out, usually.
I get that wholeheartedly. It's like, you know, you talk to a plotter and it's like, but what if you have something you want your character to do and they just don't want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
then what do you do? I mean, I've had times where it's like, oh my gosh, she just got kidnapped. Who kidnapped her?
You
know?
Yeah.
Now what do I do? You know? So,
yeah.
You know, and I know authors that you know, that they still totally plot out their books, that they can write, you know, they don't even have to write their chapters in order, and my brain just doesn't work that way. So
yeah, no, I don't think I could handle that. I've heard of writing chapters out of order too, and I don't think I could. Well, maybe someday, never say never, but it's not where I'm at these days, that's for sure.
yeah. I'm just amazed at how much, I mean, you with the three kids and, I mean, 10 books and, or did I say 12? 10 books, right?
Yep, it's 10, the Cowboys Honor coming up February is the 10th, so almost got 10 on the shelves. Yep.
Okay, well, so how long have you been writing then?
Let's see, I think I finished my first manuscript around 2008 or 9, 7 maybe, but it's terrible. I submitted it, you know, looking for agent, looking for editors, but got a wonderful wealth of rejections and tucked it away until my second manuscript was ready, and that first one will never, ever come out again. Like, that's the truth. But that one, that very first one took me 7 years to write. So I started it when I was in college. So it just, I just couldn't get the discipline down. And I think that's what, eventually that's what I needed and what keeps me going now, you know, like asking about how to fit the time in. It's like, I don't know if it's my, you know, Capricornish nature or just desperation where I really, really wanted to be a writer that got me to sit down finally and work out a time where I had to be sitting and writing no matter what. And for me, that was early mornings because of the kids. And that worked. But before that, yeah, that 7 year book was, you know, stop in and write a sentence here, then give it a, you know, give it a rest for a few months and then come back to it. And that just, well, you know, that would never work for a career. You can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and trying to, you know, write a book while you're in college, that's pretty intimidating, you know, in itself because of all the studying you have to do and papers to write. And,
yeah,
you know, that's kind of a daunting thing itself. So,
but at the time I was already in love with romance so much because I'd been reading it since high school that I just had these ideas, you know, I had so many ideas, and that's where that folder of notes comes from too, is just you'd come up with a scene or a character and I had to write it down. And so it was like a no brainer. I just have to write it. Whatever happens with it, I got to write it.
Yeah. So who was do you remember the first book that got you into reading romance?
Of course. Well, okay, I have two answers to this. So this is the funny thing. So when I was 13, I was bored, and my mom had this huge collection of Barbara Cartland novels. Do you know Barbara Cartland? A lot of people do, but then there's some people who still don't. But so I started reading Barbara Cartland. Definitely romance, but very sweet, historical, very thin novels, like 100 pages, I think. And the first one in her many, many books I read was A Kiss for the King. So that's when I first started reading like true historical romance. But then later on, I read Joanna Lindsay, The Gentle Rogue. And that was my first like full-on historical romance, all the sexy times, all the plot twists, you know, that's the one where I was like, holy cow, what is this stuff? I gotta have more. And yeah, I cleaned out my library every week, got a stack of books, read them, came back the next week and did it again all through high school. I don't know how I passed any of my classes, but I read a ton in high school.
I'm always amazed at how young, you know, you said you were 13. I have a granddaughter who's 14, same age as your oldest. And her and her sister had helped me plot out, that's a whole story I'm not going to go into. But anyway, she insists that she's old enough to read it. And my comment to her was, I'm not old enough to know that you are old enough to read it.
I can understand,
you know,
that.
Yeah. She's 14, and so I don't, you know, she asked me one day, her English teacher wanted to see one of the books, and so I gave her that one, and I haven't gotten it back yet, so I'm kind of wondering if she hasn't read it. A little stinker.
You never know. I know the librarians would always look at me strange when I came in and got those stacks. They'd be like, are you sure you're okay to read these? Does your mom know you read these? I'm like, yes, she does. She gave me my first one to read, so it's fine. Trust me.
Let's go back to your books a little bit. Sourcebook was your second publisher, correct?
Sourcebooks, yeah, was my second publisher. Prior to that was Sam Hain.
And they went out of business.
They did. I had four titles with them when I got that news. My full series and then plus a little novella prequel that followed the series of three. That was kind of out of the blue. I mean, luckily for me, though, at that time, I already had my next contract with Sourcebooks. I was already starting transition to Sourcebooks, the next series. But, I was worried, you know, are my original books going to lose a home? They're not going to be available. They're going to disappear. It was kind of sad and a little scary.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But I, made that decision at that time to, you know, I got the rights back, and then I did a self-pub release of them, re-release with new covers and new back cover blurbs, and I'm really happy. They are still out there. They're still available, which was really the main thing that I wanted to see happen, and got me a little taste of self-publishing, which is kind of got me a little curious to check out some more of that possibility. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's something a little bit different because you have to learn to format, and I write for two publishers and self-publish, and it's different.
Yeah,
so,
there's so much work that goes into it.
I'm like, oh my gosh, do I know? I mean, to get them into paperback, I was an absolute nervous wreck. I'm like, how am I going to figure this out? Which I did. I figured it out, and it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. But what you said about, are my books going to have a home again? Was those a series?
It was a series of three, and I renamed the series the Regency Rogue. So they are available on Amazon, and now I actually got them available through other retailers as well. So Kobo and iTunes and, Barnes & Noble. So they should be available most places, Regency Rogue. Yep.
Oh, okay. I know I just looked at it. I haven't read those, but I'm definitely going to have to do that. So,
awesome.
That's happened so much where, these small publishers have gone business, and it just kind of, that happened to me with Kindle World, where they ended, Amazon ended Kindle World, and you're just kind of like, now what do I do?
Yeah. The romance business, keeps changing. Publishing in general, I think, keeps changing, and there's no way to know where it's going next. There's a lot of innovation and a lot of people taking risks that, end up paying off. So the direction keeps shifting and changing. It's just trying to keep up, really, and keep your writing going, keep your books coming out.
Yeah, that's the big thing, is just to keep going. Now, the third one in this Runaway Brides, is that one, do you have an anticipated release date for that one? Will it be like in the fall?
I'm hoping the fall of, 2019, and it's the Outlaw's Heart, and because I also have another Christmas novella coming out at the end of 2019, and I really want the third book to come before the novella, because timeline, it does. So I'm really hoping book three comes out before October, but I haven't gotten the exact date yet. I'm going to have to check on that because I'm curious myself.
Okay. Is it done? Do you have it written?
Yep, it's written and turned in, and starting on some of the marketing aspects with source books. So haven't gotten my revisions back yet, but it's in the works.
Those revisions, aren't they fun? By the time the book comes out, you've read the book about 10 times, 12 times.
No kidding. And you're almost like, oh, get me out of this story. some revisions are worse than others.
You were part of a Christmas anthology, which I did read. It was Christmas in a Cowboy's Arms. Is that right?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, and I thought yours was the best, but I know it did. It always does. It's all, I'm watching the clock, and it's like I've got 6 minutes, and all of a sudden they're saying 90 seconds. So thank you so much for being with me today, and hopefully we'll see you at the next conference, or, have a wonderful holiday season. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you, Tina, and back to you as well, all those grandkids.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for listening to my first month as host of Your Book Garden. I look forward to next year when I'll be talking with more talented authors. Please join me on January 8th when I'll have another gifted Wisconsin author, Beth James, on my show. Until then, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and read on, my lovelies.